kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. My name's Pip Adam and this is episode 41. This is our last episode for 2016. We're going to use December to do a little bit of planning and a little bit of admin and get ourselves up and ready for next year, which we're really excited about. So this episode, in this episode, I speak with Rachel O'Neill, who's a filmmaker, writer and artist, and she's based here in Te Whanga Nui Atara. And yeah, we talk about Maggie Nelson's book, The Argonauts. What's to be said about The Argonauts? It's sort of, I really like this word that has been used a little bit around it, this idea of auto theory. So it's part memoir, but sort of also this wonderful blend of sort of circulating memoir and perhaps, what would the word be? Maybe ordering memoir by theory from, art theory mainly. So yeah, it's a great book. It's one of my favourite books of the year, and I was really excited to finish the year talking about it. Now, Rachel O'Neill is one of the busiest and most amazing artists that I know. I love her work. She's screenwriting at the moment. She also has made this fantastic miniseries that you can see on her website, which we'll put a link to. She's also a director, and she writes and also does visual art as well. She's got a book with Hue and Cry Press, which is called One Human in Height. She also collaborated this year with Bernadette Hall on a wonderful book. And what else has she been doing? She is a member of All the Cunning Stunts, which we talk about, I think, in this chat where I, we talk about one of the pieces of work from there. And we also talk a little bit about some of Rachel's current work. The only other thing that I wanted to tell you is that if you enjoy this talk about the Argonauts, there's going to be more talk about the Argonauts in Wellington on the 1st of December, which is a week tomorrow from 5 till 10 at the Wellington City, it's called City Gallery Wellington. Whoops, wrong way around. Sorry, City Gallery Wellington. There is going to be an open late session all centred around the Cindy Sherman exhibition, which has just opened there. So there is an entry fee. It's $12 and $8 for concession people. But on that night, gosh, I'm long-winded, aren't I? Anyway, sorry. On that night, Emily Perkins is going to be coordinating and facilitating one of her great book clubs. So myself, Megan Dunn and Chris Teese will be looking at the idea of transformation, and we'll be talking about Orlando by Virginia Woolf, The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson, which we're talking about today, and Sheila Hetty and some other people's book, Woman in Clothes. So yeah, I highly recommend that if you have a chance to come along to that, and if you enjoy this podcast where we talk about the Argonauts. So yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode. It took place in a very noisy office. Sorry about that. I didn't realise it was noisy till we were sort of halfway through, and I realised there are doors slamming and stuff like that. So I'm sorry about that, but maybe it adds to the excitement of the piece. The reality of us, you know, recording out there in the world. Anyway, I really hope you enjoy it, and thanks a lot for the year, and all the best for December, and yes, we look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks heaps.
Way to start, isn't it? Like we're sitting in an office, and we're, you know, it's almost like a job interview.
Yeah. I'll say kia ora.
I'll say kia ora. Kitapahi a koe. And we will be here. Yes, this is very good. So we are talking about The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson today. And yeah, have you read other Maggie Nelson books?
Not at all. Completely unfamiliar. So yeah, my first contact with her. Yeah.
And now I'm trying to think. I have read Bluet, and then completely didn't make the connection between her, between that book and her sort of. There's a little bit more art writing, like that fantastic book about the art of cruelty, I think it is.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, she mentions it briefly, yeah, which sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So, like, I have this weird thing where I sort of know her through Bluets, which is quite... It's similar in a way to The Argonauts, but it's sort of quite a lyrical piece of musing. It's sort of poetry, and then... You know, to go here. So had you heard anything about the book before you read it?
Yes, I had heard about it and was quite excited to read it.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of it being a memoir and then the queer aspect of the book. So her talking about her relationship with her partner, husband, Harry, who's an artist as well, and yeah. Mm. Just being, yeah, very keen to read it. And also it got such rave reviews as well, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, I heard about it first in a podcast. I feel really embarrassed about this because it was well after it was published. But there was a podcast with Chris Krause and her. It was sort of like two separate things in one podcast. And they were talking about I Love Dick, sort of on the anniversary of that book being published, and the main thing they were sort of talking about was this label of confessional writing.
Yes,
interesting. Yes. Label. And yeah, so of course I went to listen to Chris Krause talking about, you know, I was interested in this concept of, you know, what we label as confessional writing. And then you know, there was a wonderful interview with Maggie Nelson as well, and then I just got very excited about the book and went and bought it the next day, and I read it extremely fast. Did you read it fast?
Yes, it's only 170 odd pages, so it's a very quick read. I definitely found the last half of the book, I just sort of gobbled it up. The first half was felt more of like a slow introduction to, I don't know, perhaps the themes or even her grappling with how she would go on to approach the later subject matter, so particularly motherhood and birth. And so I think one of the things I really love about the book is the queer aspect in relation to motherhood. It's like this really cool combination that, yeah, I just have not read much about, especially within that so-called confessional framework. Or perhaps she is more of a writer who is exploring what it means to language enables us to say or not say. So she often talks about this phrase enough. So is language enough? At the same time, there's also this interest in trusting in the inability, and that the inability to adequately talk or describe those we love or experience itself, and that. Kind of speaks volumes itself when language can't replicate those sort of experiences. But I guess language, in terms of being a form of representation, is engaged in its own tradition. And maybe that's whether it is or is not confessional, that I think the way she's sort of connecting with that tradition of women speaking about their experiences through literature is very interesting.
Because I totally agree. Like, and I think that you and I have talked about this before, and I've heard you talk about it before and really enjoyed it. And I do feel like that first part of the book, even though it isn't cut up into first half, second half, but that first part of the book almost feels like this rallying of a chorus in a lot of ways as well. You know what I mean? Like this sort of, I don't know, like almost teaching me how to read the second half of the book or something like that. I don't know. Like there's sort of people that she brings to the problem of trying to, I don't know if problem is the right word, but you know, this task that she sets herself to sort of express in language that may not be enough, you know, may not be there to express what she needs to express, and the people that she brings to the task as well. I found that really interesting.
Do you mean the kind of quotes that are littered throughout? Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really lovely way of putting it, a kind of chorus. And then she can, I guess, respond, not necessarily in terms of agreement or disagreement with the position, just how those phrases or quotes might read in relation to the immediate experience. And then like, I think it is probably fair enough to say that the problematics of perhaps a confessional writing or a form of writing which is supposed to be a more accurate sort of direct conduit to experience or truth, or but of course she's introducing the problem of problems or concerns around identity. So the more you talk about experience or the frameworks of your life, the more you establish a kind of identity. Or, and you know, so she does quote Judith Butler around gender performativity. So the more we perform our identity, the more we reassert sometimes these violent frameworks that actually inhibit us from being who we are, or become commodified. So yeah, there all those sort of those tangents, I think she's really, like, she very carefully tries to approach. At the same time, I was left feeling frustrated by the slow approach of the first half. And I've been trying to think about it, like, why, beyond this kind of need or desire for, like, just to get in there,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think maybe it has to do with the way the book is structured, or like it does jump back and forth across time, obviously the quotes from different thinkers and philosophers, and then also she jumps back to certain memories or experiences, but on the whole there is this kind of chronological sort of flow. So definitely in terms of the development of her romantic relationship with Harry, through to them establishing their family. So I did kind of feel perhaps there was a missed opportunity to, like, think about what it means to be constructing and engaging with perhaps queer history, or, like, you know, who is responsible for that, and, I don't know, how do we talk about that? And, yeah, so that was just one thing I was thinking about, perhaps still formulating my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting, because one thing this book definitely did was send me, especially to the film work of Harry, I've forgotten Harry's last name.
Dodge?
Thank you, Harry Dodge. Like, that was something that I found really interesting, is often I would, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I would find myself hyperlinking out of the book to, you know, head over to my computer and look at the film work, you know, and I was thinking about that really interesting idea that and this may be totally the wrong way of looking at it, but that strange idea of who gets to talk, you know what I mean? And how do you make room for the person that you're talking about? And
yes,
and I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, I don't know, like in your own work, or, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, certainly for me, the parts of the book which I find really compelling are when she speaks about her direct experiences of giving birth or motherhood or this shaping of her family. And then the where it feels slightly diluted is when she's speaking to her intimate, say her more intimate relationship with Harry, and there's this mutual negotiation they go through in terms of together about what they're both comfortable with, you know, being in the book, or even how she might write about Harry's trans experiences. And so I think in a way that kind of those sort of moments of quiet or silence or not quite having access are kind of appropriate. But I also kind of I guess I wanted her to more like grapple with that perhaps in a slightly more meaty way. So in the sense of like, it's quite fascinating to think, and she does slightly touch on it, but that the people we're closest to are the hardest for us to know. You know, like, what is that, what does that feel like? And yeah, I guess
because I think that was the thing that I think I found so interesting, is that once I started exploring Harry Dodger's work, it was kind of like there's this whole body of identity searching and identity kind of like, I don't know what the word is, raising, you know, saying, this is who I am, maybe this is who I am, maybe, you know, like, and it all, it feels like that's all sitting there, you know, very, you know, like, and then to have someone come in and, you know, like, it's interesting, and I think you're right, I think, because the parts where Harry's mother is dying at the end, and I think, am I right in remembering that Harry takes over the narrative at that point? Like, I don't know if it's completely like that, or whether...
So then Harry becomes a voice, as the quotes have... as the quotes are used in the beginning.
I really loved the way that book made me question, like, the artifice of writing, you know, like that idea where we pretend to make something look like something, like we're like, hey, I put quote marks around it, and like, you fully realise that, you know, it doesn't appear as The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson, and, you know, it definitely has gone through one consciousness, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. Am I wrong in thinking that? I don't know.
So you're thinking Maggie's consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Which I guess, you know, I mean, and then I get on my tangent about, I always feel the strangeness about who does get to talk, you know, like who does get to publish the book and who does get to, you know, all that sort of thing. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And it throws up lots of questions, doesn't it? Like about whose experience you can write about. And if we do take this sort of idea that we are constituted by those who are around us as much as any kind of singular identity, we're speaking to our own experience, but we're also speaking to not just the influence of others, but this kind of mutual constituting, or it's kind of like a bit of a dilation across identities or something. And
I so love that idea, that because I think that was what I found a little bit exciting about that first part, was it did have a sense of sort of standing on the shoulders of others, you know, like it did have a sense that there was, you know, that this wasn't being invented from scratch, and we were kind of maybe in a Oh God, I was about to say we're in a moment of post-modernity. That was a shitty thing to say. But you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're in a moment where maybe, and you know, it comes at such an interesting time where there seems to be this new re-embracing of Judith Butler. You know, like where, you know, for so long it was not, you know, and you know, like I read an article just after I finished that book, I read an article in, I think it was New York Times or somewhere, sort of celebrating her again. And I just, I don't know, like, I just think it's such an interesting sort of hot mess. I don't know. Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, I think, well, Maggie Nelson definitely, like, there are definitely moments in the book where, like, that she just lets the hot mess kind of be.
Mm,
and,
yeah.
And without sort of abdicating responsibility, or how she's kind of orbiting it, but yeah, there's like no, I guess she does quite nicely unpick, like binaries and this, careful not to sort of reconstitute them, and I think I find that both really awesome but also slightly frustrating, because I guess there's this sense of like, be, if we can be like politically engaged or what, yeah, what does that mean? And one thing I like to think is that if you are whatever you've built into your everyday life, it sort of informs your politics.
Mm-hmm.
I've just lost my train of thought.
I liked where it was going.
Yeah. it will come back to me, because
it will come back. Is it good if I talk again, or should we sit and think?
Feel free to talk again.
And we'll come back. We will mark this as X, and we will come back to it. I was wanting to move a little bit. This will probably completely throw you. Oh, you're writing something down.
I'm just, I'm just still on. I'm still on that tangent.
I like it. I'm happy to wait for the tangent.
So I think it was. It's sort of like thinking about the conditions that allow us to allow political action or to think and act, and then coming very much from our everyday. So who we share our time with, what we do, what we build into our day, the kinds of conversations we're having. And I guess thinking about all that kind of building towards, say, at these moments in time where what we say or do really matters.
Mm.
So, like, everything we do towards those moments kind of builds towards us being able to perhaps say or do the right thing at the right time. And, like, you know, the words that we use at that really important time are incredibly important. I guess sometimes I want her to say those right words at the right time. Mm-hmm. Like, because I know from getting a sense of who she is that she has been in those moments, and like, not that necessarily we all get it right or that we're necessarily alone in those moments, because you know, it's all collectively connected and stuff. But yeah, I did feel like I think when you have a set of knowledge and a set of expertise, it's really good to own that.
Mm.
And I guess perhaps when you write a book, it's perhaps all good and well to say people are welcome to call me up or to challenge my thinking, or but I did sort of want a little bit more assertion sometimes of what of those perhaps times when she has put herself on the line, and because it's clear that she has.
Mm.
And she's quite brave, and And yeah, and that I guess that she has so sort of warmly and honestly and truthfully shaped this kind of family, I think, from that kind of confidence, or which is not without its doubts or explorations, but yeah.
I so love that idea, because I often think, like, I take a lot of stock in doubt. Like, I think it's one of the things that I hold closest to me, you know, is that I want to be in doubt, you know.
Yes.
I don't and I think that's what I think is so interesting about, like, I can come out with confidence at a time, but that idea of putting it down somewhere where it's concrete, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, this is what I thought on this day, you know.
Yeah.
And I think you're so right, and I totally think it is really interesting, because I think I had the same wants and desires, you know, like, there was a slight sense when I finished, you know, although it was a very bodily experience, like, I felt very, yep, right, you know, I've been there for this, I've been there for that, you know, I sort of been thinking about myself as a sexual being, you know, because always narcissistically I project myself on, you know, I've been thinking of myself
but
as
it's a huge part of the book is, what it means to be a sexual being, and then these so-called oppositions to that, which she unpacks really nicely.
Yeah, because I think that's what I really liked about it, is that I went through feeling sort of complete in my body, but there was, I think you're right, I think at the end I did feel a little, I think maybe that's you've put your finger on it. I think that's exactly, like, some of that confidence could have come through, maybe, who knows, gosh. I was wanting to talk a little bit about your work, if that's okay.
Sure.
Throw that on you. But I was just thinking, I've been really enjoying your Instagram feed of late, and because, you know, that's where I get all my art at the moment. But I've been really interested in the collages. I don't know if you call them collages, but there's sort of this really interesting idea of sort of taking very images that are photographic, or, you know, like, seem like versions of the real world, and then cutting them up, and there's a lot of mirror work in it and that sort of thing. I'm making up words.
No.
I never went to art school. You can tell.
It makes sense to me.
Good. But I'm just wondering a little bit about how that works, and the idea of you know, investigating our lives and our identity, and, you know, like, and then to produce these works that sometimes do include photos of yourself, you know, and just, can you talk a little bit about those? Like, I don't know.
I'm just trying to think if I can connect it to the book.
We can move away from the book for
no.
a moment.
You're the perfect
guest, because you're willing to
Well, it did make me think about how she does sort of reference Maggie Nelson does reference Judith Butler, and this sort of specifically this misreading of gender trouble around gender performativity, and it being definitely about how this performativity then can enable a kind of commodification of identity or desire and stuff. And I am very interested in the kind of problematic areas like, for example, taste.
Mm.
Like, we no longer really talk about taste. and I think sort of I guess sort of like I would then jump to another idea of, say, preference. So we all have particular preferences or particular tastes, And then I guess it's sort of reading what constitutes these kind of habits or these sort of positions of identity, and really, yeah, when we do perform them, what is it that we're reconstituting and how do we be responsible for that? Mm. So I think that the collages in a way are very interested in that.
Mm.
And so I've been mostly working with like late 90s, early 2000s home and garden magazines. There's not only I'm not critiquing like literally kind of modes of commodification or ironically focusing a lens on this particular aesthetic taste. I think I'm quite interested in what it means to look back at this, just this particular set of tastes or and then, but the emphasis being on the time lapse.
Mm.
So it's been 16 years since that was published. So I guess it's just kind of I think just being very interested in perhaps the tradition or history of taste, and very interested in why we no longer talk about it when it is so embedded in how we think and how we position ourselves in the world. And
because I think it's so interesting. I was talking to Nick Ashcroft about I don't even know how to explain it. He explained it better. But this idea of when we look back on something without, like, how long it takes for us to look back on and
yes.
think and not think, ugh, you know, like,
yeah.
not for it still to sort of be resounding in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really interesting about that beginning of the millennium. You know,
yes.
like, there's something really interesting about that idea. And I think that is a really good place, because I'm really interested in taste.
Yes.
I find that I'm quite obsessed with it, because I, you know, like, I feel, with that thing that I was talking about with doubt before, you know, I often feel that I am very susceptible to other people's taste, you know, and I find myself thinking, and I've just finished looking at a book, writing a, you know, it's just a made-up book, fiction, about fashion, and just this really interesting idea about how if I see it often enough, it seems to get inside me in a really weird way.
Yes.
And I just don't know who I am. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, after writing that book, I look at my wardrobe every morning and I'm just not sure what I want to wear. You know what I mean? Like, it's this weird thing. And
I think it is, it's connected to our understandings of high and low culture, or high and low, this high and low sort of dynamic or binary. So what, like, again, with the Argonauts, what does it mean to be thinking about Judith Butler or Baudrillard and then talking about ass fucking?
Yeah.
Or, you know, so and I think that's something just really fascinating about, like now, is that, I don't know, I can read philosophers, or I can watch a Korean drama, and the Korean drama may have completely fucked up gender ideas, but on the other hand, there's a kind of awareness around that, and often it's even built into the narrative, say, that there might be a kind of, like, an ironic distance, or I don't know, like, so you're kind of reading that, but then, yeah, there's also, I don't know, I guess it's the question of criticality and pleasure.
Mm.
And so, is, like, not to put them in a binary, but, yeah, pleasure can be critical.
Yeah, because it's really interesting. I had such a... I'm
just going all...
I like it. because this is, like, it's hitting so many, things for me. I met this incredible person this year who's a writer called Annalisa Jockhams.
Mm.
And, like, she and I would talk a lot about reality TV and, like, this concept of how... I don't know how to put it. I'll probably put it wrong, but... I'm quite obsessed with the Real Housewives franchise.
Yes.
And it makes me feel ill, and it's such an interesting, sorry to keep talking about bodies, but it just, there's a way that isn't a mental way that I watch it, you know.
Yes.
And I have friends that watch it and you know, say to me, oh, I'm watching it critically, and you know, like, oh, you can see this is interesting, this is an interesting exploration of privilege or something like that.
Yeah.
And I want to be watching it like that, you know.
Yep.
I'd like to be, you know, but really what tends to happen is I, like, at one stage while we were watching the Melbourne one, I actually asked my partner to make me stop watching. Like, I can you please just, I don't want to watch any more of this.
Yeah.
Can we please stop? And they were like, well, I can't close your eyes, you know. And then, of course, you know, they went away and came back and I was watching it again, you know. And
yeah.
It just, and Annalise and I often used to, because she liked The Bachelor a lot, which is
yes.
just fucking diabolical, you know. Like, and you know, she recognized that, I recognize that, but I've enjoyed The Bachelor at times as well, and there is this really interesting thing where there were people around it who were watching it, you know, with this knowing, oh, I don't know, it was like this extra, I don't know if that is irony, but there was this extra version of themselves that was watching themselves watching it and having some sort of distance from it.
Yeah.
Whereas there seemed to be, like, Annalise and I who would just be like, I don't know, like, it's so weird.
I think it's, again, about... I just think it's really important to remember how complex representation is and all those sort of subtle layers that it's always working on.
Mm.
So one can take... very rigid, potentially moral positions in relation to subject matter or form.
Mm.
But I think it's such a, like, sophisticated soup that sometimes you just want to watch some trash.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of, like, whether it's trash or not, it's all a part of, like, becoming a reader. And obviously reality TV is crafted up, you know, it's like sophisticated storytelling, but it's a particular form of storytelling that has a particular structure. It's highly, highly crafted and manipulated.
Mm.
In a way to conform to a particular narrative structure, you know, it's like Hollywood blockbusters. Like, I don't know. You could kind of critique the hero's journey, or critique, you know, why do I find this, you know, structure that's we're being pummeled with. Why do I find it so pleasurable? But I think it's all, I don't know, it's like being able to kind of grapple with representation.
Mm.
And yeah.
And that idea of, I think as well, that idea that you were talking about before of sort of high and low as well, you know, like I it was really interesting. I had a great conversation with, I don't think she'll mind me saying it, but I was talking to Sugar Magnolia Wilson about the Kardashians, and she was talking about how how she loves it when they have confrontation, you know, like, because the format of the show forces people to have confrontation on stage, you know, like in front of people straight away.
Mm.
Whereas, like, really the human, well, I don't know, my human condition is to go away and be annoyed about it, you know, and maybe talk to them when I'm calmed down or something like that. And I was just thinking how, you know, like, that's kind of conflict, you know, like, we aim for that kind of conflict in our, you know, in our I don't know, our theatre and our high arts, and then to have it there is kind of like this weird social experiment or something. I don't know. Like, it's so interesting. And I think that idea of representation is so interesting, because does representation imply that someone is representing someone else? It doesn't, does it? Because we can represent ourselves in certain ways as well, can't we?
I guess we become... We can only represent ourselves through these kind of shared forms of communication. So we build ourselves with each other, and sort of, and we're all embedded in it. So I think that's why it's really important to be able to talk or address conflict and or these tensions in representation to, because it can be difficult to pinpoint, say, sometimes it's really obvious when someone's manipulating someone else or appropriating, but yeah, it can also, we've got these, say, humour, for example, if one is presenting something in a satirical fashion or just, you know, humour itself always has this nice ability to reveal what is shared or what isn't, or allow us to unpick our assumptions and prejudices around that. And,
So true. I also have been privileged lately to read some of the writing that you're doing at the moment. And I we're going to talk about you again. Let's talk about you. I got you under false pretension. But I'm just wondering, these things that are happening in the, how can I explain it, if you're interested in these ideas of taste and sort of in the collages, is that what you're interested in the writing, or is the writing an opportunity to explore something else? Like, do you tend to, I don't know, like, sometimes I am interested in something and it infects everything I do. It's kind of like, my project at the moment is I'm interested in this, and, you know, I even find myself, like, cooking food that, you know, you know, and I find myself walking in a way that makes me think about that. And yeah, so I'm just wondering, or do you, are you able to silo them off, or how does it work?
No, I think definitely, perhaps, like you, I'm not sure, but I give a lot of thought to why I'm doing something.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Like, I'm really thinking about the... like the cover of different projects, but also really just trying to have a clear sense of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And and I think particularly these different projects at the moment, it is about kind of cross-generational experience, so reading experience cross-generationally, and that kind of implicating history and how we construct history and how that influences our identity at particular times. And even going back to your point about that kind of chorus of voices, so yeah, I'm really, really interested in capturing that, and also, yeah, just sort of tapping into all those people and voices across time that allow us to think and act and kind of shape who we are, or shape the world. And yeah.
It's one of the things, it's really interesting talking about that idea of cross-generational, and I was just thinking, yeah, sorry, I think I'm going to have an existential crisis on top of us. But yeah, I was just thinking about how, because I'm so old, I've had this very strange experience, which I think my ideas have never cemented in a particular part of, do you know what I mean? And
yes.
Like, what that means is that things that I really believed fervently, say 20 years ago, I'm questioning that, you know, I'm not sure I believe them anymore.
Mm.
And I think that's why I was interested in that whole idea of Judith Butler and how, yeah, like there have been moments where, you know, like we've put labels on things and thought, yeah, this is right. And then it's sort of moved through, and I don't know what I'm saying about that. It just that it's been one of the most interesting things of my life is that, you know, like something I would have sort of stood up and died for 20 years ago, I really don't believe anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Like, which is such, I don't know, like maybe that makes me fickle.
No, I think it's true in books as well, because
yeah.
You go back to a book I will pick up on something that I hadn't picked up on at all, or a book that had no interest to me 10 years ago, like does now.
Mm.
And I was thinking about, Hannah Arendt, who's one of my thinkers who I has really informed my work. Like the more and more I read her, there are like more problematic things that I see.
Mm.
But I like being able to contextualize that, and I like that I see the things as problems.
Yeah.
Because I guess it just sort of shows where your I don't know, interests or energies or yeah, I think it's good that they change. And yeah,
I think you're probably right. I sort of, yeah, I think you are right. And I think they do, that idea of going back to a book or a thought or a, yeah, I think it is really, really interesting. And that idea of context is so interesting as well. Like, I was just thinking one of the first things, I think the first, and you may not have even been involved in it now that I think about it, but one of the first things I think I ever came in contact with was in A Hue and Cry.
Mm.
Cunning Stunts had done it was a lift out that was like a real estate magazine. Were you involved with that?
Was that Bronwyn Holloway Smith?
It was,
yeah.
Bronwyn Holloway Smith, that's,
yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was thinking, I reckon that was one of the most exciting things that happened to me, was this idea of shifting context, you know.
Yes.
And the idea that in this day and age where printing is relatively cheap, you know,
yep.
Like you can manufacture things to look
yes.
You know, like the thing they are.
Yes.
And I just think often when I think about your work, I think of that slight shift of context, you know, like moving, like even your book, you know, like shifting prose into poetry and shifting poetry into prose and shifting scientists and moving people around and all that sort of thing. It's,
yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah. I like this idea that of pointing to an outside.
Mm.
So I think it's just good sort of to have that little bit of doubt or anxiety or openness to everything that's beyond. It's not to say you can't strive for a kind of scope or depth to your own project, but yeah, like because representation, I think it's interesting when it kind of acknowledges where it's not, or what it's not consuming, or what it's not speaking to, or yeah.
I totally like that. So if we look at something like the Argonauts,
mm.
and the fact that it has been embraced... Oh, sorry, I'm just going to say one thing that I can't get away from is that idea that we were talking about before, that idea of sex in the book.
Yes.
Seems to be cleansed out of it in a lot of reviews that I've read.
Yes.
Maybe I'm reading the wrong reviews. But, and I went to, discussions that I've had, because often I feel like the book is actually a joyful celebration of anal sex. You know, like, it seems, you know what I
yeah,
mean? Like,
yeah.
It just seems like this wonderful kind of, excitement about sex and what happens, when you become a mother and sex and all that sort of stuff. And I think that, I just thought I'd throw that out there. But, yeah, I think it has been interesting to watch. And I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts about the world that it's arrived into and why perhaps it has been embraced in a way that, I don't know, maybe it would have been embraced 5 years ago, maybe it would have been embraced 10 years ago, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Just a very off-the-cuff thought.
Good, yeah.
Which would be the kind of, like, online culture, like, so heavily confessional, there is a culture of sharing, obviously.
Yeah.
But this book canvasses so much of that kind of online world. So you have this kind of real open discussions of sex, birth, gender. Being a writer and an intellectual artist, death, family. So the book kind of sort of moves through all those areas, and I think they're all areas that we're probably all fairly familiar with through what we've I don't know, perhaps just me personally, like things that that I would read online.
Mm.
So in a way I feel perhaps that's why as a work of literature it kind of captures perhaps what is happening in that space, in a way there's a bit of a tension there for me because it is a book.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's sort of like,
yeah.
It's obviously more, it's more than this canvassing of a kind of these sort of confessional moments, but I did actually, I'm just going to go back to it. I do think structurally, perhaps at the level of language and structure, I did feel like there could have been more. Yeah, but that's just me. I think in the sense that the writing, again, this question of enough, so plain language is kind of celebrated.
Mm.
This lack of, I was just thinking, say, of the philosophers she quotes. I don't think I'm not sure if she quotes Derrida or not, but that heyday of putting language through the mill and like this making connection between thinking and language, and so that is kind of so in a way the kind of plain language is almost like it could be a reassertion or a particular acknowledgement that even in plain language there's still a lot of complexity again with my, I guess just that kind of feeling of the book being quite chronological at the same time as wanting to disrupt other binaries or perhaps a little bit more mess.
Mm. Because I must say, that was one of the interesting things about reading it, was that it's that weird, I think it's that high-low thing again, like, because we're not, because I get so much of my reading done online now, and it's fragmented, and it's, you know, like, it moves around, and it shifts around, and I can be reading, you know, things about four different things at once, and yeah, and then to get this book, which is in this weird package, which means, you know, it seems to suggest that I start at page one, and it seems to suggest that I finish at page whatever. And I must admit that it was an interesting, it did almost feel, yeah, exactly like what you're saying, like it felt like it was squashed into something that maybe, yeah, like it's that really interesting thing, like where it did feel like a product of this sort of, and that's what I think I enjoyed so much about moving to, you know, Harry Dodger's work, especially the film, because it just seemed to suggest slightly more mess. I think that was it, you know. Yes. What I mean, like it sort of, it looked like film, and it looked like, you know, often the films look like road movies, or, you know, like these sort of quite highly refined sort of ideas of movie, but, you know, the takes are just slightly longer, and the, you know, and it would have been nice to maybe play around a little bit more with that. And it's really interesting what you're saying about that, the culture, because I think that was the big argument, well, not argument, but that was one in this thing that I was watching about, listening to about I Love Dick, you know, like, was this idea that when it came out, it was pre-internet, and people were unsure about how to read it, but when it sort of got republished a couple of years ago, it's like fucking, you know, everyone's on fire with it, because they're like, oh, I know how to read this now, you know, like, I know what this is, you know, like, oh, this is this, you know. And I just think, I don't know, like, yeah, I think that's a really good point about this book. I think it's a really good point.
Yeah. And I think that's, there's a tension that she grapples with, which is, you know, it's more important to kind of be open than it is to be right.
Mm, yeah.
And so sometimes I feel like she's trying not to be right, but not to be wrong either. You know, whereas I guess the parts of the book I really respond to is just when, you know, like, as you were saying, these kind of visceral experiences, it's kind of just this, you, like, it's like you can't help but be open when you're, you know, when your body and your mind are kind of being propelled through these experiences. And yeah, I think they felt very honest, and also I think because it gives credit to the reader to interpret and make up their own mind about what they're seeing, or yeah.
Do you ever feel, this is totally, I'm going to totally put you on the spot, I've never asked anyone this, do you ever feel like you've been wrong in your art? Like, do you ever look back and think, ah, or look forward and think, ah, or, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that there are lots of things that I look back on in my writing, and I think that, yeah, that was, I wish I'd come down less, what's the word I'm looking for, like, less, sure. You know, like, I don't know, like...
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Perhaps the same criticism I just put towards Maggie Nelson, that I would also, I also think about in relation to my own work. So this, yeah, what does it mean? What does it mean to be open and then also be responsible for... yeah, what it is that comes out of that process. Because, and similarly to what I was saying before about there are times when you may want to keep a certain, there's a place for ambiguity, but then you also, like, yeah, there are also times when you sit, you know, if you do have a set of expertise or experience, like, you know, you kind of have a responsibility to, like, not just say, but to, I guess it's the cross-generational thing again, when I think about how we learn. And so I've learned from people who have you know, spoken or acted in terms of, you know, in their understanding of, or the integrity of their actions and thoughts and stuff. And so, you know, you kind of have a responsibility as well to say what you think. Mm. And it's not like you're, it's always going to be right, or you, it will stay the same. But yeah, there is something about saying something with integrity and being prepared to take responsibility for being right or wrong, or a bit of both, or
somewhere in there. Yeah, I totally agree.
But yeah, certainly I think in terms of, say, if we're thinking about gender and sexuality, I think those I really like it when it's just this kind of evolving process of understanding.
Mm.
And I think that's just kind of quite real and honest. And I think something that I did really enjoy about the Argonauts, I'm still trying to get my head around what, so this, the Argo. I kind of imagined, like, in my mind I imagine this kind of spaceship, which is kind of a chrysalis, and somehow it's like always called the Argo, but you know, there's different things growing inside it, or like different
I think you just described it perfectly. Yeah, because it, I mean, that, yeah, like, I really liked, I really, the other thing I like as well as doubt is, also, I was going to say being unsure, it's the same thing, but, you know, like, not understanding is one of my favourite things, and, like, there were points in that book, even though it is a slim book, it's in plain language, there were moments where I was just like, you know, read it again, not understand it, read it again, not understand it. And just the way that it sort of sits in me, and like, that's where I think, you know, you said you've, you know, read it once and then again. And I think this is what I really loved about it, is that I found myself dipping in and out of it and sort of going, oh yeah, you didn't understand that last time, and you still don't understand it, but you don't understand it in a slightly different way or something.
Yeah.
And I think, God, I love that. You know, like, I just think it takes a lot in this day, especially for it to be so plain spoken.
Yes.
You know, and to still have that slight veil where there's room for me, you know, like, in a couple of years' time, I might come back to it and go, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just incredible.
Yeah. And there is something cool about these kind of, I guess, just saying that there are areas of her life where we don't get to go.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
we're not entitled to go.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's real cool.
I loved the bit, you know, there was a lot of meditation around not explaining the particulars of the you know, the health difficulties of the child, and then there was that wonderful point of wondering how the child would feel, you know, like how to talk about the child, and I just thought to see that worked out on the page was really exciting for me. You know, like, that's the sort of thing that sometimes you might hear in a interview, you know, but the way, one thing I really loved about it was the way that it didn't seem to separate the writing process and the product, which I thought was just so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, to see that kind of thinking there in the book, I found so good. It was just so great.
Yeah.
It was awesome. So, I think we're almost there, but I just wanted to ask one, like, I guess it's that binary thing again, but I was thinking, when we were out at, when I was with William Brent one day, and I think I've told you about this before, we were talking, someone asked about what the difference between non-fiction and fiction was.
Yes.
And he said, oh, in non-fiction, it's the truth, and in fiction, it doesn't matter if it's the truth or not. And I was just thinking about your work, and, I mean, there's a degree sometimes of the fantastical in your work. There's a degree of, sometimes, you know, real people sort of re-orientated in your work, you know, and real things kind of shifted around a little bit. And do you have any thoughts about that idea? Like, I mean, this is a work of non-fiction, I would say, but I'm just wondering about where your work intersects with a work like, you know, like why, I guess what I'm saying is, why are you and I not writing non-fiction? I guess that's, I always ask myself this. And yeah, like more, you know, like, because sometimes I feel like I am writing non-fiction, but I put it under the label of fiction, and I just wonder why, yeah, I don't know what it is about myself that I can't engineer myself to more that mode. I don't know. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think my work, I think my work is totally engaged in kind of this navigation of sort of identity practices and stuff. That I guess I just have this awareness, just laughing at myself there.
That's the best sort of laughter. The laughter at the self is always the best.
Totally.
It's my favourite.
So frequent.
Yeah, so frequent and so rewarding.
I'm sort of not, I don't feel there's necessarily, I guess forms are of a tradition. So they come out of a particular need, or so I am interested obviously in, you know, with my own work connecting with those traditions, or what I might be able to speak to in relation to them. But when I think about fiction or non-fiction being more true, just doesn't seem, I sort of just don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I hope that's not just lazy thinking.
We're lazy. Maybe
but,
it is.
But there's something about, I don't know, for example, say if we take strangeness, so the weirdness of experience generally, you know, and how that might be reflected in fiction or non-fiction, certainly, you know, what is the truth of strangeness? Like, you know, you could say that, like, what we don't know about ourselves, or how we deal with the vulnerability of not knowing or knowing, and you know, whether certain things make us feel connected or disconnected from others, and so I guess I would say truth there, but definitely understanding the traditions of the different forms. So I think in the Argonauts there is something novelistic, and there's something essayistic, and there's this kind of tapping into kind of philosophy, and women's, the history of women's writing.
It's interesting. I totally hear what you're saying about that traditional idea. It's like, I have this weird thing where I can't often see myself in first person. You know what I mean? Like, I have this really weird thing that, you know, like, sometimes I feel like I'm sort of copying what other people, you know, like, I can sort of, I know, what's the word I'm looking for? I know the grooves to go down for that, but it never feels as true to me as when I'm investigating myself as another character, or investigating myself in another place, or investigating, you know. And yeah, I think that's so interesting, that idea of tradition, because the essay, I love reading essays, and I love that whole thing, but I just, any time I try to do it, it's this strange, I can't recognize myself. Yeah. It's just this really, yeah, I don't know. I just find it so interesting.
I guess
maybe one day I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess it's sort of like, say, realism in film or kind of documentary, or, you know, there's a scripted, you know, very particular kind of narrative construction that happens, and yeah, but perhaps what, like, we might, I imagine if we were to think instead of truth, responsibility, we would have different things to say, like,
yeah.
So in terms of non-fiction, yeah, again, coming back to who we can write about, or why we're writing about what we're writing about. But then again, why we're writing about what we're writing about is really important for everything.
I so loved it when you came and talked to our class about that idea of grounding, you know, that idea of kaupapa, like that idea of grounding, you know, what's the work grounded in, you know, because I think, I think there is a weird thing, because writing is, sorry to use that word, I'm probably using it wrong, but like, because writing is a performance and it is, you know, sort of audience facing often, and I think that people think about that earlier and earlier on, you know, just sort of in the way that there's now an idea that writing's taught, and, you know, that, you know, we can help each other, and you know, I think there's great things about that, and then there's also that interesting idea that it does seem to become audience facing very quickly on, you know, and I think that, yeah, I just think that sometimes we lose sight of what it is grounded in, you know what I mean, like what that, why I'm standing here and not standing there, and you know what, and I just thought it was really helpful for me. I think it's awesome, and then to couple that with the idea of responsibility as opposed to truth, I think is a really, I don't know, I like that a lot. I'm gonna take that with me. Steal it, Rachel.
Yeah, because I think it just acknowledges that we're already engaged in a conversation, and we're engaged in this particular conversation for a reason, and I think it's just useful to acknowledge that connection already exists and what you might contribute, and
Yeah, I so like that idea. Like, I mean, because this is the thing, like, we sit in a soup. Like,
that's very soupy.
Yeah, it's very soupy. And, you know, that's the thing is that, like this idea of new, you know, and really it is a conversation with, what's come before and what's going again, and, House and Garden magazines, and I just think, I don't know, it's very exciting to me. It feels very exciting. Is there any last thing you'd like to say about the Argonauts that I have not given you a chance to say?
I think it's, I don't actually have any further thoughts. I think
we've covered it well.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend it.
I recommend it too, and I think. I just want to talk to more people about it. Like,
and
like what resonates for them, and
because I think that is the thing, that it's not often that I finish. I'm all with that unsurety. I'm always in uncertainty. I'm always like, well, should I recommend it? But I just feel 100%. You know, like I just feel like I just want everyone to read it so I can talk to them about. You know, like, and this is the wonderful thing. I was feeling sad about being in New Zealand the other day, but this is the wonderful thing about being down here, is that we read it in another context as well, you know what I mean, like we read it outside of the art world, outside of the, you know, the university, you know, like,
and that's what I really liked about it. I was like, I'm so enjoying thinking about this book in relation to being here in Aotearoa, and it felt very exciting.
I totally agree. Yes, read the book. Thank you very much, Rachel.